Warning, the Catholic Man Show is about to begin. If you're looking for a dull, feel-good religion, or clap your hands, sit around the campfire, kumbaya, you've come to the wrong place. We are dealing with toxic levels of authentic masculinity. I would say good luck, but luck is for pagans.
Welcome to the Catholic Man Show. We're on the Lord's team, the winning side, so raise your glass. Adam Minahan here, sitting with David Niles, and hopefully this episode gets aired because we have tried multiple times. We have actually spent many hours trying to get this episode to run.
Indeed, indeed.
So, we're really hoping that this works out, Dave. We have Michael Knowles from The Daily Wire coming on our show.
Very excited about it.
Next segment.
Yes.
So, very excited about that. People
know him as a political guy, but...
He's also Catholic.
He's also a staunch Catholic.
Like a papist.
Yeah. Like a real Catholic.
So, that's exciting that he's given us some time to hang out with us on the show. We recorded with him and we had one segment completed. And then... For whatever reason, unknown to us on this side of the veil, our equipment stopped working.
Yeah.
And so we had to reschedule. And then we had to reschedule again because Precious Bernadette was born.
Yes.
And
yes.
So anyway, we're really hoping that this episode makes it.
You know, I think we're putting it together. It's in a lot of pieces. It's kind of a Franken episode.
Frankenstein.
A Frankenstowed.
Okay. Ooh.
If you will.
Okay.
But I think it's going to come out fine.
So, if this is your first time listening to the Catholic Man Show, we do three things every episode. Dave, why don't you tell them? Because, like, the last four episodes, I've said it.
Okay, so the three things that we do every episode. One, we open, review, and enjoy a manly beverage. Two, we highlight a man gear of some kind. Three, we have an epic conversation of manliness and all things testosterone-related with regard to the spiritual life and how to crush Satan.
With our bare hands.
Just destroy him. That's what we do here on the Catholic Man Show.
So without further ado, our drink that we're going to be trying today is a drink given to us. Hold on, I told him I would push his Twitter handle, and I want to make sure I get it right. But given to us by JR. JR is at JRENFUEGO. There you go.
Say that one more time.
JRENFUEGO.
Junior.
En Fuego.
Junior En Fuego.
Yes. So, thank you to JR. The whiskey that we're having is the TX Blended Whiskey. Where are we? There we are. TX Blended Whiskey. It is... Actually, it has some Catholic proponents to it.
Tell me.
The... cloth right here that's on the side,
yeah,
is made by all of them are made by a Catholic woman in Texas.
No kidding.
Yeah, so these right here are all made by the Catholic woman. Another fun thing is on the top of each cork, you can see right here, is leather, and each one is unique.
It almost looks like wood, but it is indeed leather.
It is leather. So as you can tell, I've had guys over and we've enjoyed this bottle of whiskey. So this is the very end of it. So thank you, JR.
Barely made it on the show.
Barely made it. So without further ado, we're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Cheers to Jesus.
Cheers. So it's a nice color whiskey. It's, what would you say? Probably a little bit darker than an apple color, apple juice color. On this,
yeah.
What do you think of the nose? You didn't even think about it. It's a very...
It's not my first time to have it.
Yeah. It's very sweet. It's a very sweet...
A lot of floral notes.
And honey.
Nose. Yeah, floral and honey.
Like honeysuckle as well.
That would be putting the two together.
Yes. Yes, I did it.
A little redundant, but whatever.
And On the palate, there is it is very sweet. It's almost has a lot of honey, like honey notes to me. Very oak
on the nose.
No,
on the palate.
On the palate.
See, for me, I think the vanilla overpowers the honey. So it's like, it's hard.
There is a
unless,
lot of
unless
vanilla.
You like close your eyes and don't listen to anything. You know, like when if you only focus on one sense at a time,
right?
Like you close your eyes, you can hear better. If you do like try to shut off your ears and everything, and
right?
And you taste it, I can find the honey. Otherwise, all the vanilla is so strong. Is this flavored? Like
no, it's just a blended whiskey.
I want to know, how do you get a vanilla like this, a vanilla flavor, without putting vanilla in it? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm not sure. It says they blended and bottled by Texas. Let's see. It's a very smooth finish. The result of this is, yeah, I mean, it's just saying that it's blended. And the two things that they value is true craftsmanship and excellent whiskey. Those are the two things that they value.
Okay.
It's distilled by Firestone and Robertson Distilling Company. You can go check them out. It's out of Fort Worth. I like the bottle. I like that it has a Catholic component to it. It's an overall good whiskey. It doesn't have a burn to it at the end. It's very smooth. It's very easy to drink.
Oh yeah.
It would actually be a good summer. It's actually a good summer whiskey.
Oh yeah. Yeah, and I agree because it's light. Like, mm-hmm. It's very easy to drink. Like, I feel like bourbon goes a little bit better in the summer. And scotch is, you know, a little bit more
of a fall,
like
winter.
Like a cold weather, right. You know, like, scotch is, I don't know if there's, like, more calories in it.
I don't think so.
There's definitely an extra punch with scotch, you know.
Yeah.
But Texas, for us in Oklahoma, that's, like, half local.
Yeah.
It's basically local.
They would not agree with it, but Father Brian Ketter would not agree either.
Yeah, well, he doesn't know everything, okay?
but no, thank you, JR. Thank you for getting us this whiskey so we can review it on the Catholic Man Show.
Hey, why don't you give JR a toast?
JR, may your vocation be as smooth sailing as this whiskey going down.
Huh.
Cheers.
Cheers. Nice. Nice, bro.
Not too bad.
Bro mochacho.
Thank you.
Potato chip.
Thank you. So, Dave, how's everything going in the Niles household with the new baby?
You know what? It's going really well. She's sleeping well, which is, that's kind of like the big question, you know, with the new baby.
Yeah, it's really like,
how's she sleeping?
Right,
you know?
Right.
She's only waking up like maybe two times a night.
Mm-hmm. That's really good.
And I only wake up maybe once.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And when I do wake up, it's like, oh, the baby's crying. I just have
poor Pamela.
I have a wonderful, I just cannot, she's ineffable.
Yeah. You can't continue using that word.
It waters it down.
It's
my new, it doesn't water, it doesn't change the meaning.
Yeah, but it doesn't make it as, like, if I continue saying it over and over and over again, then it loses its
meaning.
She's
undescribable.
Unbelievable. So everything's going well.
Everything's going so well. So people ask me, it's just like, well, how do your babies, you know, you've gotten so lucky with three girls who sleep so well from the beginning. It's like, no, we're just really good parents.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's really the key.
Yeah, that's what it is. We're just phenomenal parents. And so our kids behave perfectly and sleep well and... Because of our parenting.
Because of your parenting.
Right.
I can't wait for you to have a boy. That'll be fun.
Yeah, he will be a cross between, like, The Rock and Tim Tebow.
Okay. Dwayne Johnson and little Tim Tebow.
And Thomas Aquinas.
Oh,
a
nice.
Blend.
A blend of all
I
of those.
I guess not a cross. It's more of a blend.
Okay.
Yeah.
We also just... interviewed Carlo Broussard from Catholic Answers. He came to Tulsa and we had a chance to interview him here in the studio.
Yeah.
Which is super cool.
And even though we all agreed it was going to be just for the Council of Man, Adam decided to make a liar out of me and post it on YouTube and just forget that I had said that the whole time. So
Yeah, in fact,
go watch it on YouTube.
In fact, I didn't even forget. I just blatantly.
I didn't say that you forgot. I said you decided to make a liar out of
it. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It was a positive choice.
Okay. Yes, it was. Yeah. But you can go check out our YouTube page. We are doing this episode on video as well. So anyway, we're going to try our best to start doing video. I think as time goes, we're going to continue getting better at it. It is a whole new animal, but it's going well.
Yeah.
Overall.
I think so. And it's definitely improving, getting a lot better.
It is getting a lot better. We're going to talk about Reverence tonight. I'm really excited about Reverence.
With Michael Knowles.
With Michael Knowles. Real quick, I wanted to read this quote because I didn't get a chance to in the interview, and I think it's really good.
Okay.
And I just want to get your thoughts on it real quick. Here's the definition of reverence. According to a priest, he says, it's a surmise of greatness and holiness and a desire to participate in it, combined with the apprehension of being unworthy of it.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think I think it's a good definition.
It like pulls it yourself out of the equation.
In other words, I think reverence would be the recognition that other things are greater than yourself.
Right.
You know,
but your desire to be a part of it.
You do not reverence an ant.
Right.
Or a spider.
Yeah, you step on them.
Right. You don't have to like sit there and reverence the ant, but you reverence things that you recognize as having dignity of at least equal to yourself or beyond yourself.
Right. So when we get back, we're going to jump into the man gear with Michael Knowles from the Daily Wire. Hang in there with us. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
And welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles, here with Adam Minahan. We are joined by Mr. Michael Knowles from the Daily Wire. Michael, thanks for being here. It's a pleasure to
thanks
have you
on.
Thanks
for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. We're very, very excited about it. You're probably, maybe, the most famous person I've ever talked to.
Well, you got to come out here, man, because I'm the least famous person. So, a lot more famous people.
So anyway, thanks again for being here. We're also recording this on video. So this is our inaugural video recording episode of all the brand new stuff, all the brand new toys that we have. So it's nice to get to use it all.
Yeah.
And I'm glad it's working.
Yeah. So Michael, as we said, before we got going, we are drinking a little bit of the TX whiskey bourbon. We highlight a beverage every episode. If this is your first time listening, while promoting moderation is something that our society today does not do a good job of promoting, either one way, one extreme or the other. So we try at least to promote that you can have a drink, you can sit down with guys, have a cool, good conversation, and enjoy a little bit of whiskey.
That is absolutely true. You know, I think it was Chesterton who said that the Catholic Church is like a thick steak and a glass of red wine and a good cigar. And he was a little immoderate, maybe in his physical self. But it's very important. I wish that I could be joining you with the bourbon right now. I'm currently, it's still work hours where I am on the West Coast. So I'm just drinking Covfefe out of my leftist ears tumbler.
You know, the thing about drinking liberal tears is that there's just so many of them. You know, it's like
it's immoderate. Yeah, it's very hard to be temperate when you're drinking the leftist tears. There's been a deluge recently. I feel like I'm Morgan Freeman in that movie Deep Impact. But nevertheless, we persevere.
Well, today for our man gear, we're talking about glasses. And we're going to be sending you one of our Catholic Man Show Glencairn glasses. It's a glass designed by science to make your whiskey taste better.
Boom.
That is fabulous. I try to keep an extensive liquor selection, not because I go boozing every night, but it's very important, you know, to be able to be able to make any drink when someone comes over and to have the right glass. So I can't wait to add it to my glass collection.
Absolutely, absolutely. I like to think of it as leaving room for the Holy Spirit to guide me in many different directions.
Selection.
Yes, you know, maybe it's gin, bourbon, scotch. I mean,
maybe it's a good craft beer.
Yeah, I don't want to put limits on the Holy Spirit. Anyway,
that's right.
So, and I think that's a really good transition into what our man gear is today. We want to talk about having the right glass for the right drink, because it makes a difference. You know, you would never drink, I would never want to drink water out of this glass, just because if I'm drinking water, I want more than a few sips of water, you know? And there's something about honoring a drink with dignity, you know, dignifying it with the right container.
Vessel.
The vessel, yes. That's the word I'm thinking of. Michael, do you have a favorite drink?
I do. Well, it's so hard to pick just one. It depends on the time of day, I suppose. Yes. You know, Winston Churchill, a man to whom we could all aspire to be, you know, in our public and political lives, he started drinking whiskey at 8 a.m. And it wasn't like he was drinking a bottle of it. He would have a little tiny bit of it in his water, and he would have that in a certain glass. Then he would have champagne at lunch. Then he would have a cocktail. Then he would have wine at dinner, right? On and on. Really prodigious amount of booze that this guy would consume all day. And so I like, for a cocktail, especially in the summer months, I like a martini, gin, dry, maybe a little dirty, if we're just talking between us girls here. And then, you know, with dinner, red wine. I don't really like white wines that much. And then after dinner, I really prefer spirits, or port, or occasionally brandy or something. But I really like spirits, because I find these days, I'm not a college kid anymore. So if I have two cocktails, if I go out and have two cocktails, I'm going to have a hangover for a week. Whereas yes. If you have spirits, they don't really damage you in that way. And they don't totally kill your productivity the next day.
Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about. And that for me has also become a thing where it's like, you know, if I have this, I'm going to really regret it tomorrow. And it's just going to, you know, it ruins your whole morning, at least, just because
it's a real shame, because I've just recently discovered this great cocktail from, I think, the Prohibition era, called the Stinger. And this, I really like cigars, and this is supposed to go with a cigar. And it sounds disgusting, but it tastes very good. It's brandy and white creme de menthe. And it's supposed to be a nightcap drink, and you have it with a cigar. And the reason that they made this is because all the booze during Prohibition was of such low quality that they had to cover it up with this, you know, saccharine mint taste. Yeah, but the trouble with these things is you have three sips, and then you're going to have a hangover for a week, and you have to call out of work. So I think probably best to stick, like you guys, to the spirits, bourbon, whiskey, rye, you know.
Yeah, and you know, something that this Glencairn glass does is it portrays like this atmosphere, this event that takes place. You know, it's not something that you chug, like you were saying in college, like, you know, you don't chug alcohol any longer, right? You know, there's a specific reason why you drink, so you kind of slow down a little bit. You enjoy what the scotch or the whiskey is. You know, you smell it first, then you kind of taste it on your palate. You enjoy the finish. You kind of let it linger a little bit. So that way you can get all those notes. You can get all the tasting notes that has taken 10, 12, 18, 20 years to come up with.
Yeah, and so there's been this, you know, revolution in the beer world specifically, which is just phenomenal. So many delicious, delicious beverages. It's kind of like a lot of people, I think, are playing catch up. You know, they're trying to make, you know, become more knowledgeable about beer. And I think one thing that is a good step to make is making sure you have the right glass, because there's many different kinds of, even if you just look at beer glasses, there's many, many different kinds. And Michael, like you were saying, if you're only going to have two drinks, then you should really take your time and put some energy into those drinks so that you get as much out of them as you can, because, you know, it's all about having a nice leisure and really enjoying the finer things in life. And so there's all these different glasses. You can just do a Google search, you know, the difference between a
snifter and a pint glass
is, you could put just about anything in. A snifter is going to be for like a dark
Imperial IPAs.
Yeah.
Stouts.
Stouts, yeah. And that's important because some of those glasses help the beer hit your tongue in the right way. So, you know, for the right flavor palette to be emphasized. Others are just to demonstrate, you know, like in...
The color and head of the beer.
Right. Yes. Yeah. So I just think it's important to, if you really want to take it to the next level.
Right. And really what this all cultivates, I didn't mean to interrupt, but what this cultivates is like having guys getting together and having meaningful conversation, right? So guys enjoy typically a nice drink and a cigar. I have my humidor right back there, but in today's world, we don't get together as men and have meaningful conversations. You know, G.K. Chesterton also said that there's nothing more to discuss than religion and politics. Those are the only two things worth discussing. You know, we don't do that right anymore, which is an epic fail on our part.
Speak for yourself, fellas. I don't know. I'm here in La La Land. I try to make as much time for that as I can. But you're absolutely right because, on a couple points, actually. When you talk about the vessel of the drink, really bearing on the drink itself. It's if there is a theology of the body, which there is, there's a theology for the body of the drinking vessel too. Mm-hmm. When you think of a martini, for instance, there are really two glasses you could drink it out of. A martini glass, the one that looks like a V, and a coupe glass, which kind of comes in, and you can have champagne out of that too. And I always prefer the coupe glass for the martini because when you walk around with a martini glass, it starts sloshing the gin all over the place. You get it on your shirt, you get it on the floor, and you get, most importantly of all, you get less martini. This seems to undercut the purpose of a martini glass. Yeah. Whereas the coupe glass does it very well. And you wouldn't have a martini out of a stemless wine glass or something, because then your hands would warm up the martini, and you don't want that. Nobody, if you're ever at the point in life where you're just drinking glasses of room temperature gin, you should probably seek the help of a priest and maybe a psychiatrist. So there is absolutely that level. But the getting together with guys, I've always made it a point to do this. It was easier before I got married, but with some frequency is to go to a night. There are a couple that go on in LA and in New York where it is just guys, usually with a cigar, maybe having dinner and having a drink or two and discussing religion and politics, discussing things that matter, things that are, you know, both the news of the day and how the news of the day relates to eternal questions that men have always talked about. This is really important. And a number of my friends, if I bring them to one of these dinners or one of these cigars, they'll be shocked. They'll say, oh my God, I didn't know this still existed. But it's so important. I mean, it is, especially for guys, to make a point to do that regularly. Because I think otherwise, especially in this culture, which is so absurd, I mean, you know, out of sordos, out of sense, that you'll lose your mind unless you kind of settle back and take a moment to do that every so often.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that the reason why, I think there's certain aspects of men not wanting to, or every time we talk about this, every time we talk that we have these men's groups, as soon as we tell guys this, they're like, I want to come. When is it? And it's because people are starving for this. They're starving for true, authentic, masculine friendship. That's something that doesn't happen these days. So anyway, we're about to hit a break. When we get back, we'll jump into the man topic. We're here with Michael Knowles from the Daily Wire, one of the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. We're on the Lord's team, the winning side. So raise your glass. Just to make sure that everybody understands, no, we did not have a wardrobe change. No, Dave did not run to the bathroom really quick to shave off his mustache. This is round two for us with Michael Knowles. The first go-around didn't go as well. So, my first, you know, we talked to you, what is that, a week ago, 2 weeks ago, I guess? Michael, I got
so.
My deepest apologies that you did not get named Supreme Justice. I thought you were there. I thought I was going to be there.
Well, I worry. It might be that the dogma lives too loudly within me. I would have never gotten by Feinstein.
So I would like to designate this next 12 minutes to why soccer is not really a sport. Are we ready?
Yo, yes. we could dedicate 12 days to explaining that anti-Western socialist pseudo sport. Yeah, but I don't think we have sufficient time.
No. Okay. Okay.
It's sort of like naming broadcast acting a sport, yeah. Or Broadway acting. Yes.
Yeah, that's right. It's like the fish screensaver from the 90s. You know, just like, that's soccer. And it's so frustrating because for 4 weeks, every 4 years, women and liberal men have to pretend that they like this. They've never seen more than one match in their lives, I think. But I ask them, I say, name me more than two soccer players, professional soccer players, ever. I'm not talking about that guy in England. What's the famous one?
Beckham?
No, the guy.
Beckham, and I'm not talking about Pele. Once you get rid of those two, name me two others, and nobody can because nobody actually likes soccer. They just like criticizing America, you know, so they pretend to like soccer.
Well, I will just give you a quick, this is a funny World Cup story. I was watching one of the games, and it was Iran versus somebody, and the commentators were mentioning how the Iranians didn't have their regular shoes. And they said it was because of the sanctions put on them by President Trump that they weren't able to get their actual shoes. And it's like, but then of course, the commentators are like, "Oh, those poor Iranians! It's so terrible for them." And it's like, "Oh, they're trying to kill us! Who cares about their stupid shoes?"
Hezbollah couldn't send them back a couple boxes of shoes for the game. You know, this is the real evidence, too, by the way, that soccer is a ridiculous and fake sport, is that countries that have, you know, 50 times the GDP of Uzbekistan, Uruguay, or whatever, will lose to the small third world country. And it's because it's just a random sport without any personal narrative, and it's chosen mostly by chance, by the referees, or you get to the end of the game where nothing has happened, and then they just start kicking, so you've got a tie, and then there's a tiebreaker, which is a tie also. It's just random luck, you know. It's really socialism on the field. It worries me deeply that Americans, I don't think Americans like soccer any more than they used to, but they're pretending to, and that's a very dangerous thing for our culture.
But you know, we all have opinions on, everybody has an opinion on everything these days, informed or uninformed. So I decided to have one, and I've been rooting for whatever team has the highest percent Catholic population. That's who I root for. Croatia is 98% Catholic, according to Wikipedia. Yeah. So it's like, go Croatia. I hope you win.
I am really pleased. Of all of the countries, even broadly within Europe, the only ones that haven't completely lost their minds are Croatia, Poland, and Hungary. And I do love that Croatia is, you know, apparently winning the World Cup. I haven't been watching any games, but it does give me great joy. Yes. Maybe that'll make me a soccer fan.
So, Michael, we hinted on the last time that we're going to be talking about reverence and the virtue of reverence. Mm-hmm. You know, you recently just got married. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you very much.
Whenever I got married, it was obviously in a Catholic church. I have half of my family that is not Catholic. So I was observing as they were walking in, and our wedding was not a 10-minute, say I do, vows, rock back down the aisle, let's go party.
Everybody applauds.
Right, yeah. It was actual full mass. And so I was kind of watching as much as I could on people and what their take was. And I could tell a lot of them were awestruck. A lot of them were kind of dumbfounded. They didn't know really kind of what was going on, but they knew something sacred, something reverent was happening. Did you get that in your wedding?
Entirely. I was so pleased because the wedding, the nuptial mass was celebrated by my priest and friend in New York, Father Rutler, who is very old school in his sensibilities. There aren't a lot of acoustic guitars or eagle's wings going through the masses at the Church of St. Michael, and there isn't wild applause for the drum kit on the altar. You know, it's much more traditional, and there's a reason for that. You know, the church always pushed plain chant, and you know, or Gregorian chanting after Gregory the Great, and there was never use of percussion because percussion is said to bring out the baser instincts in people. And so there used to be really beautiful hymnody, even a lot of it written by Protestants, a lot of it written by Anglican clergymen. And now we've replaced it with this awful liturgy where the priest is facing you and he's telling jokes on stage. Actually, the priest who celebrated my wedding mass, he said that those ham actor priests who tell jokes like they're in a dying vaudeville show should limit their repertoire to the jokes that the Blessed Virgin told John while her son bled on the cross. And that seems fair enough to me. It's so lovely when you're in a really big church, in a proper church, not one of these suburban things that looks like you could have a car show or something there also. And you have the light coming in through the stained glass, you have the organ going, you have beautiful chanting, you have beautiful singing. I'm being a little funny about it, but there really is a purpose. When the priest is facing Ad Orientem, it's not because he doesn't like the parishioners. It's because it's not about him and it's not about you. It's about him leading you in worship of God and, you know, directing you toward the altar, toward heaven. And when you get that, I've been to a lot of weddings now where, you know, it's, you know, 1, 2, 3, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. Everybody applauds. There's a big kiss. In my wedding and in a traditional Catholic wedding, you're facing away from the congregants. You're facing toward the altar in it. So it's not really about you. It's about the sacrament, the joining of you in a true sacrament, in the meeting of heaven and earth before God. And I so much preferred it for a couple of reasons. One, it's reverent, and fear of the Lord is the beginning of all wisdom. And two, on just a practical matter, when people are sitting there facing all their friends and family at their wedding, they get a little nervous. You know, you say, what should I do with my face? Yeah. I'm not listening to the homily. I'm just, you know. And when you're facing away, you allow the sanctity of this experience to come over you. You feel it much more seriously, I think. It's a much, much more sober way to do it. So I highly recommend it to anybody who's debating, you know, an Eagle's Wings wedding or one of those that
gather
one
us
of
in.
The more serious
Let's
liturgies.
Gather us in.
They'll say that there is a church in California that I go to where instead of it saying, let's call to mind our sins, they'll come and they say, hey, everybody, just say hey to everybody out there. And I've got the guy trying to like French kiss me in the pew next to me. That nobody wants that. It's about worshiping God, not about saying howdy do to your neighbors.
That absolutely drives me crazy. But one of my favorite things about a wedding liturgy in particular, especially in a today where everybody holds hands during the Our Father and let's all touch each other. After the Our Father, typically the priest says something and then the congregants, you know, for the kingdom, the power, and glory are yours now and forever. Well, in the wedding mass, you don't do that. There's no the kingdom, the and so I love to sit there and look at all the people holding hands and watch how long they will continue to hold hands before they finally like look at each other and be like
well, I guess
we're not doing it today. Okay, like
yeah, do we? What do I do? I guess my hands are getting a little clammy. What do I do? There is a reason why in the traditional liturgy the mass is sung. Why in the Eastern Orthodox, the Byzantine rite, it still is all chanted. It's to take away the personality from it. Certain singers or people reading the epistles or reading the scripture go up and they really make it dramatic, you know, like this is their chance to audition for Hamlet. It does take something away. It takes some of the reverence away. Mm-hmm. Whereas when it's chanted or when it's sung, you're getting the beauty directly, and it also elevates the reading to a more reverent and respectful place.
Yeah, the first time I went to a Latin mass and I walked through and I kind of just observed, I realized this is what a Protestant feels like whenever they walk into just a regular mass, because I knew something sacred was going on. I knew it was holy. I knew everybody was participating, but I had no idea really kind of what was going on, when I should say something, when I should sit, when I should kneel, when I should genuflect. You know, it's like this whole idea of like, this is what they feel like.
Yeah. Yeah, that's absolutely right.
But, you know, it's interesting. We only have a couple minutes left before we hit our break. But, you know, you mentioned how the church is built, supposed to be looking upward. And sometimes they're built out where it almost is more about you and not an outward thinking, or even better yet, an upward feeling. You know, you're considering like, I'm looking at somebody else compared to I'm supposed to be looking at the cross. I'm supposed to be looking at the altar and what's happening, the sacrifice of the mass. That happened probably in the late 60s, early 70s, but it seems like it's going back to more traditional looking churches, well, architecture.
It does, because how could anybody, and especially any man, feel a transcendence or feel a sense of the divine when everybody's hugging and kissing and singing those insipid hymns that sound like they're written by like Nickelback or something? I mean, how could, or a Sarah McLachlan song? Nobody would do that when you're gonna have good, strong hymnody. I mean, there are too many pacifists in the church militant. And the way that you can hear this, by the way, is at the end of Mass sometimes in the more suburban versions of it, people will applaud. They'll applaud the band. And you think, oh, well, I think you've maybe missed the point here, which is this: the Mass is not entertainment for you. It's not a way to pass a jolly hour on Sunday. It's to worship God. And you're not applauding somebody because they sing well. You all together are worshiping God. And I think if you have the sense of that, then the Mass will really elevate everybody and really lift you up, hopefully all the way to heaven.
Amen.
Absolutely.
We'll be right back. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. David Niles here with Adam Minahan in studio. We are joined via Skype by the ineffable Michael Knowles. Michael, thanks again for being here.
Thank you for having me. Did you use the word ineffable because the only book I've ever written is completely blank? No words for it.
You know what? I think there is a lot of people who that book, it's like the best idea. There's got to be thousands of people who know you because of that book.
Yeah, it's funny too, because I've done plenty of things where I thought, oh yes, this will be very successful. Everybody will like this, and then it totally flops. And then I did Reasons to Vote for Democrats, a comprehensive guide, entirely blank book, just as a way to irritate my Democrat friends and relatives. And within 2 days, it became the biggest book in the world. And it, by the way, it is one of the oldest jokes in the world. I mean, this in America, the joke goes back to 1800. When another Republican was trolling another Democrat. It was the presidential ticket of James Garfield and Chester Arthur trolling General Hancock, I think it was, and saying the political achievements and statesmanship of the regular Democrat nominee for president, five blank pages. Now paper is cheaper, so I had 250 pages in my book. But it was a really remarkable thing, not because it was a clever joke on my part, because it's an old joke, but because the people who were Republicans and bought it loved it. They would leave these 10-paragraph reviews quoting Thucydides and Herodotus and Plutarch. It was just really, it showed the exuberance and the cleverness of the right. It's really a joy to watch.
So we're talking a little bit about reverence. We've kind of talked about liturgy. We've talked a little bit about architecture, church architecture. I think, though, that when the church and the people within the church degrade reverence, it bleeds into other aspects, and to the point of now, even in culture today, we have guys who their whole job, what they do for a living, is to try to take pictures of other famous celebrities' children and other celebrities, you know, like what they're eating, and like just a complete invasion of privacy, to the point of it's like that's what they do for a living now. I think this is maybe a stretch. I don't know, but I think that a lot of times whenever you degrade reverence to the point of you know, you're not doing it in church, it can bleed into your everyday life to the point of, like I said, you have people who are completely having no respect for another human being.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a product of a subjectivist culture and a relativistic culture where nothing can be sacred. And it's because the premise of this culture, this popular culture, is that there is no metaphysical world. There is no real moral order, certainly not a traditional Judeo-Christian moral order. There is no real ethical framework. We're all just automatons. We're all just material, motivated by desire, really lacking free will. And in that world, how could anything be sacred? Why would we have respect for anything? And it does begin, I
think I may be pandering a little bit to the audience here, but I really believe it. It begins with Martin Luther, who began as a very scrupulous man, probably neurotic. He spent hours and hours a day in the confessional to the point where his confessor said, hey, pal, you know, calm down a little bit and go and live your life. But he was a neurotic and very fastidious. And then when he broke with the church and decided to start preaching outright heresy, he became loudmouthed, profane, and fat. And I don't think that's any coincidence. He lost a sense of reverence. His writings are riddled with profanity, disgusting scatological insults. And it's no coincidence that that is the beginning, the very early stages of relativism in the West, the beginning of the modern era. No coincidence.
So, Michael, I think that you could look at reverence and measure the reverence of the culture by the way that they honor tradition. I think that tradition and reverence are inexorably linked. And I think that something that would be degrading them is just a overall lack of humility. You know, in a mm-hmm. Facebook world where everything is just, the world literally revolves around you on social media. You know, it's easy where you could mm-hmm. think, I'm more important than these traditions of my forefathers. What traditions do you think that we need to make sure, I'm putting you on the spot here, I know that, but are there any traditions that you think these are important? We must honor these to maintain any semblance of the goodness of our culture.
Yes. Well, one that's in the news a lot lately is respect for the flag, because people don't really understand what symbols are, and they don't understand what sports are, and they don't understand what respect is. So you're in a tough position. Yeah. And the flag controversy in the NFL really sums that up, because the flag is a symbol of the country. To protest a flag or to kneel and, you know, protest a flag or to burn a flag is not to protest some problem that's going on within the country. It's to protest the country itself, which is ironic and self-defeating because that country ensures your right to free speech and to freedom of thought, which allows you then to burn the flag. So it totally undercuts itself. It's divided against itself. But, you know, when I was growing up, not too long ago, if a flag touched the ground, this was a very bad thing. You know, yeah. Your mother would say, don't let the flag touch the ground. Pick that up. You have to have respect for the flag. People died for your freedom, and this is the greatest country in the world. Hillary Clinton, I think it was Hillary Clinton's campaign. It might have been Obama's, but I think it was Hillary. One of the two tweeted out a photo of flags lying on the ground at some rally that they were doing, and they said, getting ready for the rally later, putting up the whatevers. And it didn't even occur to them that it was a violation of respect and of flag etiquette to put a flag on the ground. They had no idea. They had no sense of respect and of the sacred. Now, you know, respect for the country is probably a lower matter than respect for God. But it is a symbol, and it's very important in our culture, because a culture that cheers on football players while they disrespect the flag is a culture that's lost the sense of itself. You know, the games and athletics and sports have always had a common theme, all the way from ancient Greece up to that modern pseudo-sport soccer, which is patriotism. It's respect for the country and love of the country. The games celebrate the country. Now we have games that are turning against the country, and it's because the culture hates itself. People disrespect the God, they disrespect the flag, they disrespect the country, they disrespect the culture, because they disrespect themselves. Mm. If you have respect yes. for yourself, you won't do that. You know, Frederick Douglass was on we're hopping around a little bit in American history. Frederick Douglass was taking a train, and the steward on the train told him he had to sit with the luggage. He couldn't sit with everybody else because he was black. And a white pal of his came back and said, I'm so sorry that they're degrading you like this. And Frederick Douglass said, those people can't degrade Frederick Douglass. They've degraded themselves. And that's what happens. When you first, in order to disrespect the country and the culture, you have to disrespect yourself. And if people had more respect for themselves, you'd see the culture get a lot better, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking, is that this lack of respect for others eventually leads you into a lack of respect for yourself. You know, and it's exactly, to me, Satan's plan, you know, that we would just have utter self-debasement to the point where we eventually hate ourselves, where we would want to, you know, commit suicide, or, you know, just that whatever the ultimate evil would be in the world.
Right.
And when you see celebrities doing that, you know, it's terrible, but in some ways it's like, well, yeah, you know, you bought into all of these lies, and they don't feed you.
you see it with Western culture. I mean, there are, how many books are out now called The Suicide of the West, right? It's a common theme. And I had a conversation with a Protestant friend, and he said, why do you people, you Catholics, why do you venerate Mary? Who cares about Mary? I said, well, you know, she's the mother of God. Doesn't that,
that's one.
Not
yeah,
good
that's
enough? I don't know. Yeah.
You're, Jesus
you
liked
respect
her a lot.
My mother. Yeah.
Jesus is a big fan.
That's right. Yeah, he really liked her. You know,
yeah.
That simple act of disrespect. That's because it's the question is an absurd question. It's one that assumes an ethic of disrespect rather than just assuming that we should respect others. We should respect people's mothers. We should respect, I don't know, God's mother. And you see the West killing itself in that way, killing itself through various public policies and cultural mores. And that's a really scary trend. I hope that there's some way to turn it around. There are always little glimmers of hope, but I wonder if the culture's too far gone.
Yeah, that is very interesting. We're about to be done here, Michael. It's flown by. I wish I had another, I don't know, three segments with you because I'd love to pick your brain more. But I do want to say I appreciate, you know, I know it can't be easy to be a Catholic in Hollywood. Cannot be easy, regardless of who you are. So I do want to thank you for that because that's refreshing. Something that I think, though, we need to work on, obviously, getting Andrew Klavan Catholic. He's like Catholic light. And then Ben Shapiro, like, you know, the guy is all about logic. Let's just talk about philosophy for just a minute with him. And I think he could get on board.
Ben is a big fan of Thomas Aquinas, so maybe that's the way we'll get him. I think it'll be a little harder to get Ben. Drew, I always try to pull over, you know. The trouble with Drew, though, is he's read every book ever written, so I can never get him on. So I say, but, you know, Thomas Aquinas, he says, I know, I've read Thomas Aquinas. Yeah. But Augustine, I know, I've read Augustine. So we got to pull him. Right now he's a high church Anglican, but, you know,
he's so
joining
close.
The Anglican church.
He's so close.
Well, he's so close, and joining the Anglican church these days is like grabbing onto the Titanic while it's going down, you know, not even just fiddling. So maybe time will bring him over.
Dr. Edward Faser's really doing the number on Ben Shapiro, though, I think. Ben Shapiro's a big fan of Dr. Edward Faser, so hopefully we can get
him. Well, you know, hope springs eternal in the human breast.
Okay, Michael, we've got about 20 seconds left. I want your order of hierarchy here as far as what we should reverence. It's obviously God, and then maybe country or self. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. God, country, community, family, self, and cigars, because the body is a temple and the temple needs incense.
Ah, that's
but it's
right.
In that order, you know. It's very, very sort of Burkean sense. We really, there's a lot of respect to go around.
God, you could not have put that.
That was a beautiful bow.
It could have been divinely inspired, what you just said. Anyway, Michael, I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the Catholic Man Show. It's been a blast.
Yep.
Go head on
Thanks
over to the Daily
me.
Wire.
Really
check Michael out on YouTube. Go Cafefe. We're on the Lord's team.
Winning side.
So raise your glass and cheers to Jesus.
Chin chin.